This episode is sponsored by More Than a Number, the brand new podcast from ICAEW. Search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to hear Louise Cooper and thought leaders unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So we're almost there, or are we? There's no white smoke just yet, but lots of things do seem to be moving. James, update us on what's happened this morning.
So the way to think about it is that the Northern Ireland part of the Brexit deal, which is the most controversial, the most difficult, is essentially like a seesaw. You've got to keep it in balance. And the UK has moved towards the EU on regulation and customs, and that means that the DUP wants more on consent. They feel that
we know that the UK has moved more towards...
Yes. So what that requires then is more for the DUP on consent. Working out what that is very difficult and fraught, because the EU do not want a situation where they agree these arrangements and they could be, you know... I think they accept consent, but they don't really want consent that might involve the consent being withdrawn, if you see what I mean. This is the paradox of the position. So everything is getting very difficult there. About a week ago, the two sides were miles apart. Mm. They are now inches apart, but these last inches are the most difficult for the two sides to meet on, because they hit everybody's bottom lines, essentially.
But despite all this, Katie, it seems like Boris Johnson is keeping the DUP and the ERG on side, at least. He seems to have been meeting them quite a lot.
Well, they're in discussions because Boris Johnson, even looking at what happened to Theresa May, is aware that there's no point agreeing a deal that can't pass the Commons. And therefore, if he is going to, you know, green light this and say to Brussels, let's now get this into a text and present it at the EU Council meeting, that's the point where you can't really have any more changes. You've seen how difficult it is to move from Theresa May finalising something to reopening it and getting back to that conversation. So that's why you've had several meetings with the ERG visiting 10 Downing Street last night. You've had Arlene Foster and the DUP have several meetings with Boris Johnson, which I think shows you that some of the opposition he is getting from them, the fact this isn't an easy sell. And ultimately, the reason that we don't yet have a green light and, you know, this is pressing ahead, there'll be a vote on Saturday, is because Boris Johnson has to make a political decision, which is, do you agree to something and then hope in the days leading up to Saturday, in the days leading up to the vote, that you can get people like the DUP round? Or do you hold fire until you know they're agreed? And at the moment, it seems like it's pushing towards the latter. But that's what's holding things up. And I think there is, again, just a sense that, do you try and bounce the DUP into a position? I think if you look what happened with Theresa May, I'm always reminded of my favourite source quotes, which was unfortunately not to myself, but to The Sun, which is the DUP talking about negotiations. You know, he said, well, they're waiting for us to blink, but we cut our eyelids off.
Oh my God.
And there is just a sense that I think there's a view that going for something they disagree with and then hoping they'll move is risky. And I think that it would also be very difficult for Boris Johnson if the DUP aren't on side, because that gives Brexiteer MPs cover to not back this. And you've seen that today. David Davis making the point that it will hinge quite heavily in terms of how many of them back this deal and what the DUP is saying. And it's something that in an interview which will be in the magazine coming out, we spoke to Jacob Rees-Mogg, and again it's pushing this idea that the DUP are key, not just because of numbers, but because of what it says about what Boris Johnson is proposing. If the DUP are against this, it suggests it is not a unionist offer, and that's why it's so much trouble for Boris Johnson.
But James, so far the DUP haven't rejected any offers outright. But are we seeing that some hard Brexiteers are actually splitting off from that Boris Johnson loyalty? Owen Paterson telling The Sun, for example, that, you know, this is not workable. Ian Duncan-Smith has exploded.
I think this is why what the DUP say matters so much. The ERG haven't been told the specifics of whatever Boris Johnson is negotiating. By contrast, the DUP are being told the specifics. If the DUP agree to this, I think it is quite hard to be more unionist than the DUP. I think if the DUP say, we can live with these arrangements for Northern Ireland, I would be shocked if you had any Tory MPs voting against it on Northern Ireland only grounds if the DUP were happy with it. So I mean, that is the question. I mean, the other crucial point here is, you know, what do the other EU member states think? I mean, Michel Barnier is very cognizant of what they all think and is unlikely to get ahead of them. But I think they won't like the idea of being bounced into agreeing a text. They will want to see what all this means, because one of the concerns they have is that, you know, Boris Johnson wants to move away from some of the commitments that Theresa May made on the level playing field. I think there will be some resistance to that, particularly as that pertains to the Northern Irish question. So I mean, there are lots of things to happen, but this is all going to the last minute. You know, Barnier's briefing to the member states' ambassadors in Brussels has been pushed back by a few hours. You know, by contrast, the cabinet has been brought forward, and I think that all suggests that they basically need to try and create a kind of last minute push to get this over the line. But you know, it might be inches, but often these inches are the most difficult inches to cover.
But do you think the DUP and the Tory Brexiteers ultimately do have the same aims? There have been rumours of, for example, more money offered to Northern Ireland, which would sweeten the deal for the DUP, but not necessarily for people like Owen Paterson.
Yes and no. They don't, in a way, in that it obviously, in terms of Northern Ireland's role in the UK, the softer the Brexit is, the easier it is, which is obviously not what the ERG want. They want a more distinct Brexit, a more definitive Brexit, put it like that. I think that is true. I think they have, so it's always been a slightly odd alliance. Mm. I think the DUP have chosen to do it because they believe where both the DUP and the ERG have limited options is they had one card to play, essentially, which was changing the Prime Minister. They have done that. They have replaced Theresa May with Boris Johnson. And right now they both have to confront the fact of what the consequences of, if Boris Johnson went for a deal, voting it down again would be. And the consequences would, I think, likely be a second referendum and a much increased chance for a Remain Alliance government, which is particularly bad for the ERG. And from a DUP point of view, would be particularly bad if it ended up with Jeremy Corbyn, a long-time friend of Irish republicanism, as the Prime Minister. And also, I think, again, from a DUP point of view, another independence referendum in Scotland is, again, unsettling for them, in that if the union begins to unwind in that way, I think you can imagine a situation in which you begin to get English nationalism. You know, with people saying, oh, Northern Ireland, well, why do we have to pay for that kind of thing? Because if the union begins to break up, all sorts of difficult things happen. So I think both the DUP and the ERG have fewer options now than when they rejected Theresa May's deal. But I also think that the point about the DUP is, you know, they aren't going to want to accept something that they see as, you know, pushing Northern Ireland into a kind of permanent semi-detached status from the UK, from the rest of the UK, I should say.
And I think this is why choosing to pursue a deal, and again, things are so fluid, I'm pretty certain of the things, I'm not certain about many things, but I am certain there'll be another podcast before the end of today. So, but it is a political risk for Boris Johnson to try and pass a deal. And I think, again, this is why we're in this holding pattern, because if he tries to do it and then the DUP say it's not unionist, and then you have enough Brexiteers who would be loud, they would go, you know, various platforms to say why they can't back it, you get into a situation where I think you could go into a general election with slightly tarnished Brexit credentials, and you can see how Nigel Farage can make hay with that. And I think the second risk, which is actually like, even if he managed to do the completely impossible today, or not today, this week, and pass a Brexit deal, that is universally seen as, you know, a big win for Boris Johnson. But it isn't without risk in terms of the party's electoral strategy, because everything up to now, including the leaflets that have been leaked to the BBC, are all about, you know, Boris Johnson is a man who can deliver Brexit. If you delivered Brexit, they're going for all these, you know, Labour Leave voters, and all in the various focus groups, there's this idea that they might lend their vote to Boris Johnson so he can do the task of delivering Brexit.
Right.
If you deliver Brexit,
is this domestic agenda not attractive enough?
Well, this is a test now, because they've moved it to trying to get these Labour Leave voters combined with Brexit. So they'd have to do a bit of a pivot now. It might be that this is a better scenario because the economy would receive a boost. And if all these factors are at hay, you know, that helps the Conservatives their pitch. But they're going to have to rethink quite a lot of their positioning and potentially go for some of their 2015 electorate if they pass a Brexit deal. Now, I still think passing a Brexit deal is seen as a big thing to aim for by Number 10, understandably. But I do think that it does mean they have to rethink their strategy.
It is under, I think Katie's eye column is on this subject this morning. And it is undoubtedly a more complex. I mean, I was talking to a cabinet minister last night about the prospects for a deal. And this cabinet minister was admitting that the election campaign would undoubtedly be more complicated if you pass. I mean, the extension election is quite an obvious election to fight. They know how they're fighting it, and they have been preparing to fight that for a month or so now. It is the get Brexit done message and going after leave voting seats in West Midlands, the North East and Wales, and that they think could get them to a majority. It would be a very narrow majority, but they think there is a route to a majority. If they get a deal, there is the potential for a more comfortable majority. But the election campaign becomes much more unpredictable, because how much can you do get Brexit done when you've done Brexit? How much can Labour flip this back into being a traditional left-right election? I think probably the biggest bonus for the Tories in terms of passing a Brexit deal would how it would discombobulate the other side, because Labour and the Liberal Democrats have big decisions to make about whether they would be a rejoin party or whether they would reconcile themselves to Brexit happening. My personal view is it's not until after the end of a transition period, December 2020, that Brexit is actually, in inverted commas, safe. Because up to that point, the Lib Dems could run the election saying, look, nothing has changed yet. If you vote for us and we got a majority, we would go to Brussels and say, actually, we're cancelling the whole thing. And even though we'd legally left, the EU would let us back in now. That would be a debatable proposition. But it would be true that the UK wouldn't have diverged in any way from the EU at the time of the election. So I think that is probably why it is probably easier for the Tories to fight an election after a deal, in that the confusion it would cause and the division it would cause on the Labour and the Dem sides. But Katie's undoubtedly right, the campaign is a more complicated campaign. It has to be more multidimensional than it would be during an extension.
And Katie, finally, even if Boris Johnson does manage to pass a deal this Saturday, the EU is now saying, you know, we might need a technical extension in order to get the legal text hammered out. So could we not be leaving on October 31st, even if something is agreed before then?
Well, the UK government side is adamant that if they can get a deal, you know, we are leaving on the 31st of October. I do think that you can see how it drags in a bit, and I still think there is a sense that the most likely thing here is an extension, be it perhaps a short extension. But if Boris Johnson can do what seems impossible and get a Brexit deal to pass it, you almost think the next part, which is actually just getting things through the House of Commons, it almost seems like the easier part of the three. and I think that if you speak to various ministers, they point to the Hillary Benn Act and the fact that, look, if you can make something into law in that shorter space of time, surely you can do the same in this case. So I think there would be a big push if they managed to make all these other things dot together to try and meet their deadline still. I still think that an extension seems very possible in this thing. And also, I think just, you know, news just in as in the sense, I think this DUP meeting has now finished, which they're talking about. And again, it doesn't seem as though there's about to be an imminent breakthrough.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast and all our other podcasts on the iTunes Store, wherever you get your podcasts from. And do give Spectator Radio a go. On there, we've got podcasts from religion to culture to American politics to food and drink. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.
Thanks to our sponsor, More Than a Number, the new podcast from ICAEW. Here, presenter Louise Cooper in discussion with thought leaders, unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time. Are businesses ill-prepared to cope with climate change? Is workplace inequality inevitable? And do businesses really have an age problem? Simply search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to download now.